Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect health, safety and environment to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hey there, thanks for joining me here in the Safety Podcast. We're back again. Things are getting back up and running here on the podcast after a few weeks of a break as we sort of navigated the start of the crisis that we're going through, I suppose. And this week's episode, we have Tom Oxley, a previous guest on the Safety Podcast, back on the show to chat a bit about how we navigate through all this. Tom gives us some insights into his experience so far, both personally and through the activities of his own business in helping others manage through this crisis. Of course, being a mental health specialist, there's a massive role both now and going forward when it comes to helping employees and business leaders make the right decisions. We do touch on quite a lot of interesting points and I think really useful information. As I said at the end of this conversation, it was really nice for me just to chat to someone who, you know, is talking to a lot of other people across our field and across the business space to get a feeling of how they're coping. And that in itself is almost cathartic or therapeutic in a way. So I hope you do get benefit from the conversation as much as I did. And of course, as normal, I'll tie it up for us at the end. So let's go over and speak to Tom Oxley again. Tom Oxley, thanks very much for coming back on with us in the podcast. I'm not sure how long ago it was now that since you've been on last, but it feels like a long time ago.
Well, it was a different world, wasn't it? I think it was about a year ago. And goodness me, a couple of months ago seemed like a long, long time ago. It seems like a really different world we're living in now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree. I was thinking about that just before you come on, you know, and as we've already discussed, for every person and every individual, the circumstances will be different from then and now. In the last few weeks in particular, I know personally speaking, it's been a bit of a whirlwind of emotions and, you know, practical implications and all sorts of things have changed. Are you getting by yourself okay, first and foremost?
Thank you. Yes, we're well, and we're very grateful to have the food that we need and a house to be in. So we feel safe at the minute, and we've had our meltdown moments, goodness me, like any other household. But generally speaking, we're doing all right. Yeah, we're doing okay. Thank you.
Good stuff. Well, I was delighted when you reached out to me to say that you would be, you know, enthusiastic about coming on to discuss some things around the whole pandemic and the situation that we've been put in here, and the effects that it's having on, you know, people and businesses. Obviously, as you were saying to me, you have been doing some work in terms of trying to help businesses to cope as you're learning through this process, because obviously for everyone it's a, you know, it's a new thing, and as I'm sure you're trying to apply a lot of the thinking that you were previously applying to this situation and learning new things as you go along.
That's right.
Yeah, what's your take or your quick sort of overview as to how businesses are dealing with it, I suppose?
Well, I think that we're seeing the full range of experience of people in their different homes and different working experiences. And it broadly depends on the type of job that you do, so, and the industry that you do it in. So a number of people have been sent home in a sense, either furloughed or to work from home. For other organizations, that's just not possible. And people have, you know, coming in to either prepare food, to stack food, to keep utilities going, particularly shift staff, hourly paid staff, perhaps staff who don't have the same choices that a lot of leaders do in their general life. And they've really just got to keep going into work. And that is, of course, includes the frontline care workers as well. So there's a full range of personal experience and a full range of organizational responses. Some organizations, they have spotted all this early. They were taking people's temperatures and starting to send people home some weeks before the organization locked down. And that organization clearly has a crisis plan and puts it into action. Others are learning fast and on their feet, and others, with all due respect, are not prepared and have fallen between the cracks of financial assistance and are really struggling. Now, that can really affect people's mental health. Certainly, there will be individuals out there who are thinking the very worst about this situation themselves. Perhaps they've run a successful business, employed people, and have been doing good work for a good time. All of a sudden, that is all almost overnight. It feels like taken away from them. And that can have very serious consequences, not just the money in the bank, but the idea of personal fulfillment and value and having things to do.
Of course, obviously speaking as a small business owner myself, and in the middle of this, trying to get something up and running and building, and then not being able to avail of support. I think it does feel like an existential crisis of sorts, and I suppose it's hard when you're in the middle of it to try and reflect on what's happening at a higher level, isn't it?
It is. So Bamboo is being asked. In the early stages of this, I thought that, the phone would stop ringing and I could have a couple of weeks in the garden. But people were quite quickly interested in being able to help their people out with that initial response period. And that's what we've been able to do. And one of the important bits of advice we'd be giving from the very start is to try and separate out the things that we're concerned about but we can't control, like the science and the government response and the death toll, and then we start to think about the things that we can influence and that we can control, such as the structure in the household, personal routine, and those sorts of things. And really, when people can start to acknowledge and accept the things they can and can't control, we can focus on the here and now a bit more easily. And it, in a sense, gives us less to worry about, because we know that we might be concerned, but we can't try and control everything. I think that's the big part of the stress in this. You know, when you arrive at a train station, your train's been cancelled, you feel that stress. You can't do anything about it. There's no point in being stressed about it, but we do. If you can park that stress and focus on, okay, so what can I do? How can I get the next train home? Then you can start to feel a bit more in control. And that sense of control, I think, is really significant to people, because a lot of people are out of it, out of control.
Yeah, I imagine. And it's on multiple levels, isn't it? As you're saying, there's a sense of helplessness when it comes to, certainly, I know, speaking personally, I'm not speaking for other people here, but in terms of, the broader picture of what's going on, with the pandemic, and not being able to maybe help as much as you want to, because, you're constricted by the confines of your own limitations and protecting your own family or your own circumstances. And then, as you say, you're distracted by all of the information that's being fed to you, and that becomes a question of, what's real, what's fake, what to believe, what not to believe. And that's one level of it. And the other level, of course, as you were saying already, is on the individual and the business perspective, thinking about, what does the future hold? And should I keep doing things as I was doing previously? And as you've already mentioned, Tom, this is affecting people in so many different ways as well, that when it comes to providing guidance, I'm sure you've already experienced this. It's not a case of one size fits all either. Would that be a fair assumption?
Fair, isn't it? We've got to be really careful, either as a leader or a manager particularly, that we don't look at our own situation. Maybe you've got a nice office at the back of your house. Maybe you've got a garden to go and sit in. That's just not the experience of a lot of people. And that can be, that's important when we look at this and how we try and help and advise and support our people through this time. I think it's quite important that we stay in touch and we engage with staff. And that sounds like quite an obvious thing to say, but here's why. If people are in a difficult situation and nobody, particularly nobody in authority, is listening to them, is hearing them out, is taking on board the things that they're feeling, then that exacerbates those difficulties very much. And as we go through this crisis and we pull out the other end, whatever that looks like, it's very important that listening continues. So if you talk to people who are in clinical mental health, they'll talk about post-traumatic stress and things like that. And they'll say things like, when individuals experience a trauma or a significant challenge and somebody is willing to listen, willing to believe them, and not necessarily fix or solve it, but hear them out, then it can have a very positive effect on the long-term experience of that individual.
Okay, so listening aspect.
Do that listening. Keep in touch with staff and do that hearing them, hear them out and understand what their needs are.
Yeah.
Because it's probably they don't want in-depth training. They don't want you to chuck loads of money at this. Actually, the act of being heard is really important. Doctors who spend the time listening to the world and the story of their patients who come and see them are 50% less likely to see that individual again for the original physical condition. So being heard is actually biologically important to us as well. It stops us feeling lonely and isolated. And those are very much themes that are around today as well.
Mm-hmm. And as I was saying, not only, I'm sure, from a job perspective, but obviously outside of work, we're all feeling very isolated as well. So it kind of has a double meaning there. Whenever you talk about, Tom, the importance of listening, I'm sure a lot of folks will probably, their immediate response will be, well, you know, pretending to listen and not backing it up with action is as much of a problem as, you know, as not listening in the first place. How do we bridge the gap between, I suppose, you know, that listening and taking meaningful action? But I suppose it goes back to when you think about the difference between, as you were saying, you know, some people are currently in circumstances where, you know, this whole thing just isn't impacting them as much personally. I imagine, you know, within businesses, we have leadership, people in leadership positions making the decisions. But as you know yourself, they're not often the ones that are most affected by the decisions that they make. And the people on the front line will be those that are going to be most impacted or in this case, put at risk in a lot of circumstances. Is there anything that you've been doing with businesses or any advice that you can give in terms of how we bridge that gap for leaders and for those affected?
I think when we look at something that all organisations should have but typically don't, such as a stress risk assessment, the act of keeping in dialogue with your people is actually sometimes as important as the changes you make. But when you do engage with staff, then it's important that you feed back to them that they've been heard, that you feed back to them the type of things they've been saying and what you're going to do about it. To go back to the train station analogy, I don't know if you've ever seen those signs where it goes customer service board and it says, you said you wanted da-da-da, we have, you know, yeah. That sort of thing can be really, really powerful for people. And that would be the sort of organisation that has an ongoing dialogue with its staff. So they're not relying on some obscure metrics from an annual survey that says, oh, your wellbeing score, your engagement score is 4.63. This is up 2 points. It doesn't really mean anything. I think if you're going to use real language and go back to people in real time and quickly and say things like, I will make sure this changes for us. You know, you're in a leadership role. Your role as a leader is really important in reducing the different types of distancing that you get with teams. So you can have geographical distance, you know, in terms of place and time. Then you can have like the sort of affinity distance where you've got a big difference in things like values and trust and purpose. And that's really important for leaders to close that gap between purpose. So to talk about values and personal experiences and those sorts of things is really important at this time, because it stops people thinking, oh, it's just the us and them scenario. It's all right for you. You're in your big house in the country. They've got no idea that the leader has only slept 3 hours, that is, you know, in constant contact with the board, that may have symptoms themselves, all that sort of stuff. And I think it's important that people get human about this. That's probably the best thing a leader could do in an organization, is keep human about it.
Yeah, I think it sounds like a very obvious thing, doesn't it? But it's very easy to forget that aspect of being human and caring and just demonstrating that sometimes, as you're saying, the link between listening and, you know, your actions being influenced by that listening is very important, not only to do, but to actually, sometimes you really need to demonstrate it. And as you were saying with the train station example, you need to almost put it in front of people's faces to show them, look, I have made a decision based on what you told me or what your feedback was, and making sure that they hear that message is really important. I think that's what you're getting to there.
Yeah, that's it. We've been, you know, in all crises, you get these sort of packed different stages, don't you? You get that kind of incubation period. That's when, you know, the virus is in another country, and then it's in Europe, and then it's across the border. And then you have that initial incident response, where we have to send people home and that sort of thing. And then one of the third phases is that learning and change piece, that where we find, even from difficult times, we find that innovation and we find adaptation and those sorts of things. And we can start to look at performance based on a new way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And a smart organization, a smart leader, will not waste this crisis. Sounds like a funny thing to say, but we mustn't waste this crisis. We mustn't just go back to everything being the same, as we must spend time learning about how we can do different and improve based on people's experiences in the organization. Because they'll probably know this stuff. They'll know what it was like. They'll know how easy it was to work from home. They'll know, they'll have a different sense of productivity now than they previously do. I mean, productivity used to be being in the office between 9 and 5 in a rough roundabout way. But now we know that productivity is if you can get two and a half good hours out of the morning and then another couple of hours of admin in the afternoon, you're doing quite well. And it's funny how much work you can get done in that time without having to have meetings about all the work you're doing. You just do the work.
It's one of those things we all sort of, you know, everybody sort of knew it to an extent, but not very many get the opportunity to test it out. Of course, now we have. Something I was thinking about is, I suppose, again, trying to reflect from my own experience during this, you know, with all the noise that's going on around us and the amount of information that's being fed to us, and the fact that it's so easy to get drawn into following things like you were saying earlier, you know, death tolls and you know, how badly things are impacted. I was just thinking, you know, is this as much about tuning our brains towards trying to lean into the positives of this experience, as you're saying, as opposed to dwelling on the negatives? And how do we do that? Have you any tips for us? Because I'd love to hear them if you do.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think you need to allow space for the bit where people are mourning and experiencing the difficult things they're experiencing. We must not forget that thousands of people are dying, and they will be related to people working in your organization, or they'll be on the street, or they'll be a Facebook friend or something like that. So we cannot go headlong into, well, we toughed that one out, didn't we? And let's look at the positives. Mm. There are more subtleties than that. So we need to give space for people to do the mourning and to understand that we have lost a way of life that we enjoyed. We didn't necessarily appreciate it, but we've lost a lot of freedoms from the past. So we acknowledge that. And for people who've been severely affected by that and have had increased or exacerbated anxiety or stress as a result of that, that those people are given the correct therapeutic support that they need. And organizations, small and large, can find that either in the employee assistance program or through mental health first aid, if you've got a proper program, a proper supported and supervised program of that in place, or they could fix up short-term counseling. That would be effective as well, almost certainly for people who wanted that. So you give respect to the people who have experienced some difficulties. But generally speaking, we can facilitate people to think about what they learned and how they can adapt from this. And you can bring them into a new normal, if you like. I think some of your listeners will be familiar with something called the change curve, which was developed in the late 60s by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And she came up with a change curve, looked like a bit of, you know, a roller coaster with two camel humps in it. It's about the pattern of our thoughts through this. We plummet down, we go into a point of despair and difficulty, and as we hit the bottom, we kind of bounce out into the shoots of new recovery and acceptance. And that bounce out needs to be facilitated in organizations. People need to be heard out, people need to be listened to, and people need to record the adaptations and innovations that came about through this difficult time.
Okay. I think that's a really important part that you just mentioned there, in terms of being very conscious of recording your experience and what is actually, you know, what is positive throughout that experience, to then feed that back to your organization, to use that as a platform for positive development then, or innovation in the future.
Yeah, that's right. I think that, you know, you one of my clients had a malware attack from an external source, and they lost their IT systems for, I think, 3 weeks. They, as a result of this, when they got back on their feet, the IT back on their feet, they said to their staff, any aspect of our IT systems or anything that you did online before the malware attack, and you realized you could do it offline, drop it. We'll leave it out. We'll leave out that part of the process. So they really did make the most of their crisis, even though it was really, really difficult for other parts of the organization. And I think that's important. So recording it, using it, and learning from it, from the new way of doing things. I think another big example of that is going to be this flexible and remote working.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people are sort of sorted for that in their working space at home. And a lot more people are probably going to be able to sign up to that in the future, potentially.
For a lot of people, you know, this won't apply, but I'm sure for many, they will be in the position that they've had to do at least some working from home.
Yes.
I imagine, personally, I haven't been too badly affected by that, because it's something, you know, I was quite used to. But I can imagine, and I do know, you know, from previous roles that I've been in and so on, that the thought of working from home had in the past been, you know, a negative thing, or something that I personally felt might be a big challenge in terms of productivity and so on. Have you got to speak to many people in terms of how they are adapting to this, and, you know, anything that might help from that perspective?
Yeah, some people are absolutely just struggling to cope. Some people really are surviving. You know, the different hierarchies that you have at work don't always translate back at home. You know, yeah. You wouldn't choose your family to be your colleagues for a start. And some might be a leader manager in the workplace, and then all of a sudden they're working from the kitchen table where your three-year-old might be your VIP stakeholder, you don't, things are just, they just don't translate correctly. So some people are really kind of will be glad to get back to work, but others will have found new ways of working and have realized that they can work more productively at home. As it happens, an organization from China trialed remote working on a large scale. It was 16,000 people, an organization called C-Trip. They're a travel agency. And they enabled 1,000 of their staff to work from home over a 9-month period. And they were randomly assigned to the home or the office. And home working led to initially a 13% performance increase, with people able to work more minutes out of their allocated working time. There was less illness, there was lower attrition, and so it was generally quite a positive thing. At the end of the trial, they offered people whether or not they wanted to stay working from home or they wanted to go back to work. The people who did not get on with working from home, they were able to go back to work. And then more people who worked for this organization were allowed to go and work from home and enjoy those benefits if they wanted to. And productivity went up to by 22%. So this is not directly comparable because they weren't forced to do it and it was planned and all that sort of thing. Mm. But just to acknowledge that there are potential benefits from organizations enabling this. And we kind of always knew that, but that people will have rehearsed it and not just for a short amount of time gives rise to different behavior changes. So it's not like, remember a couple of years ago, we had the beast from the east in March, and everybody, you know, across the country had 2 or 3 days at home with all the snow and ice and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we could kind of get through that sort of working here and there on the knowledge that by Friday we could fall out with our family and be back at work, a bit like Christmas. And you know, yeah, we sort of, like a couple of days of this, we can all sort of survive it with cornflakes stuck to our sock or whatever. And then but this is different because A, it's more serious, and B, it's lasting longer. So habits will stick in a different way to a short-term crisis. So we've been doing this for sort of 3-4 weeks so far, with another 3 or 4 weeks to come at least. And that starts to people's behaviors, that starts to affect people's behaviors and the patterns of those behaviors, and will start to embed into our routine. So yeah, I think it's really important that organizations do that learning piece about what's working people and what's not, and be prepared for their workforce to be thinking differently about this idea of working.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you're saying, the longevity of this is going to have profoundly different impacts, not only during it, but afterwards. I'm thinking out loud here for people that are going through, you know, this process, both for those that are managing people and for those individually. My understanding is that, and certainly from speaking to peers and just people over the years, a lot of people really struggle when it comes to being isolated, working from home on your own. You know, just that lack of social contact from a mental perspective as a human being can be very challenging for people. Do you think that's something that we can overcome? Is it just a short term thing, and or is there anything that we can do to proactively, you know, challenge that or help ourselves get through that?
That's a really good observation. There's a piece of research done in the 70s where if you were part of the research, you had to record the events that were going on in your life, and you'd spit in a tube to and monitor your heart to recognize how stressed you were. And isolation and loneliness from a cortisol and a heart rate point of view were as stressful as being attacked in the street by a stranger. So it's not an obvious traumatic event. It's the University of Chicago did it. It's not an obvious traumatic event, but it has a very serious biological effect. So that is very real, very true for us. And one of the ways in which we can overcome that, although there will be a certain amount of struggle, it's not pleasant. We don't like it biologically. We are designed to be part of the pack. So that's the sort of thing we can try and do. to connect with people, to hear voices, and to see faces will help to stimulate the right parts in us to make us feel like we're part of something. So group calls and group video calls are better than group WhatsApp and group emails, because we actually get to see faces and hear voices. Okay. And if we start to do that, then that can help a bit. I want to acknowledge there are some other good things as well. So we're doing sessions on something. One's called Mind Food, which is where people can give an active, do some active rest and recovery for their brain, where they do some creative stuff through these group sessions, or mindfulness and meditation work for people. So we actually have time out of the worry zone in the active recovery zone. And in doing that, we just give our brain and the stimulated parts of our brain, the anxious stress stimulated parts of our brain, a bit of a rest, and give a bit of a workout instead to the learning bit or the giving bit. So if you're feeling particularly down and difficult yourself, then getting in touch with people is very good. Ideally hearing them, just seeing their faces. And if you're feeling rubbish about your personal situation, then some of the other good things you can do, and this features in the New Economics Foundation 5 Ways to Wellbeing, is to give. So is there any way you can volunteer
to help? Yeah.
Can you ring somebody else who's in distress? Can you reach out to people in your network who you know might be having an equally difficult time? And those sorts of things. Can you set up a group for like-minded people? Can you, you know, what could you do for yourself and start to change that from being in victim mode into being part of your own recovery? For people who feel isolated and alone, sometimes dropping a card through a neighbor's door can help that. Or indeed connecting with employee assistance lines. You don't have to have a clinical condition to get support with stress and anxiety. So that's another important thing, I think, for people. So you don't have to have had a doctor and been off on pills for you to have a useful conversation with somebody about how you're feeling. And that short-term coaching and checking in and those sorts of things would be the sort of thing that's available through your employee assistance program, mental health first aiders. If you're a small business, that is available through the Federation of Small Business Support. I think they're famous for legal support, but you can also get some short-term counselling support through that, or you can link into any number of local charities or online counsellors in your area. So there are things that you can do for that.
Excellent. Maybe we can put together a few links and resources, you know, along with the podcast page, Tom, that we can share with people here, because I think there are, as you've mentioned, you know, a lot of opportunities there, and it's a really important point, I suppose, to really wrap us up here on this, is the fact that there is a physiological impact, and it's quite significant, of this isolation. And, you know, it's really important, as you said there, to be part of your own recovery in this, and sort of change your mindset towards being proactive with it. I think that is really important, and you know, it's a good message, you know, to send to people. And I'm really thankful, you know, having you on here with your background to discuss this. It's been therapeutic for me just to even have a chat with someone outside of these four walls so about it.
I feel the same, Richard. We, you know, it's easy to say, you know, oh, I should be this, I should be that, and, you know, but actually to give yourself just give yourself a bit of space to feel the difficult days and the tough days, and that is allowed. You know, mostly, we will mostly be okay. When this context changes, when this passes, and it will, then we will come out of it, okay? And it won't be ticker tape and a VE day. It will be in stages, and it will be a bit messy, but we will come, most of us will be mostly okay. And I think that's really important to keep that hope with us as we sort of, yeah, we're still bedding in for the time being.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, you know, don't be too hard on yourself. I really appreciate you coming on here to the Safety Podcast to talk about this with us, Tom, and I hope you continue going on and helping individuals and businesses over the next while.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. Okay, stay well, go well.
So that was my conversation with Tom Oxley, second time round. Well, I mean, where do we start there in terms of reflecting on that? There's quite a lot I took away, apart from just it being quite nice to have a chat with Tom, with his expertise and listening to his thoughts on what's going on at the moment. A big theme, as you may have picked up at the beginning, is the importance of focusing on what you can control rather than what you can't control. And I know for me personally at the moment, there's much more that I'm focusing on that's out of my control, or certainly over the last few weeks, that's been the case. And I've really tried to consciously move away from that. And so that's something I would say is definitely useful to keep in mind and keep working towards. And Tom also mentioned, particularly from the leadership point of view within the business context, the importance of staying engaged with what's going on and being engaged with your people. Of course, we talk a lot about engagement at safety.com in general and in terms of what we do. And in times of crisis, sometimes it's easy to bury your head in the sand and become, you know, less engaged than what you maybe were previously even. But Tom was just reiterating the point that it's extremely important to stay engaged and make sure that you're practicing that listening. And as we were mentioning there, you know, making sure that you're showing, demonstrating meaningful action that's related to it. And of course, as Tom was saying as well, it may have sounded odd or strange to some of you, we shouldn't waste this crisis. And as with any event in life or business that we perceive as a negative one, generally, we have to look and search for those opportunities and those learning outcomes that can benefit us as we move into the future to make us perform better and operate with more resilience as we move forward. And this is the time, you know, to make sure we're, as Tom said, recording what we're doing, recording what we're doing differently, and recognizing those things that we're actually not doing that all of a sudden we realize are unnecessary in the first place. And that adaptation and innovation then being created from this massive change that's occurring at the moment. Tom was mentioning the change curve. As we move through that, there's a lot of learning opportunities within it. And it's really important to stay conscious of that across both business and at an individual level as well. And Tom termed it as, you know, making the most out of a crisis, which of course almost sounds wrong in its essence. But what he was really saying here is that we have to leverage anything that we can learn from this experience. Something else we touched on towards the end was just the ongoing impact that the physical isolation and the, you know, the different circumstances that we're currently operating under is having on us. And Tom's example of the study that was done that compared the impact of loneliness or isolation versus being attacked in the street or mugged as being essentially the same in terms of the level of stress that it causes the body is really quite startling and makes you realize how much of an impact this can really have on us. So as Tom was saying there, you know, really when we do our family quizzes on Zoom or with friends or whatever it is, the importance of doing something of that nature, regardless of how bad your quizzes are, it's just that hearing voices and seeing faces and that the impact, positive impact that has mentally on us is really quite profound. So I, for one, will be making sure that I'm doing lots of that with my my friends and family where I can. And Tom also mentioned the importance of giving and helping. As I was saying at the start, you know, it's very easy to feel helpless during all this, but there are opportunities, and we'll put some links on the podcast page for you. So that wraps up this podcast, and hopefully for me being, you know, part of the podcast and for you guys listening to it, this is us helping ourselves and being part of our own recovery, as Tom has asked us to do. So until next time, stay safe, look after yourself, and hopefully we'll see you again. Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you got value from the content. If you'd like to provide us with some feedback, which we would obviously love, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're using. Also, if you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe to make sure you catch our future episodes. And of course, share it with anyone who you think may find it useful. For more free resources and to find out more about what we do, you're always welcome to visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care and good luck.